Welcome back to the Blooming Basics for ZVM and Linux on System Z Part 2 teleconference. I will turn the call back over to Julie Leisenfeld. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Tamika. Welcome back, or thank you for joining us. Our next topic is the value of open source and Linux on the mainframe. Again, the handouts are posted on the ZVM T3 website, Partner World, and on SSI. And if you're looking on SSI, the handouts are starting with the date of 06-23-10, Part 2, A, B, and C, and this would be number B. I'm going to turn it over to Evie. She's going to take questions at the end of her presentation, so if you have something for her, jot it down, and you can ask at the end. Evie, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Julie, and thank you, everybody, for joining the open source and Linux on the mainframe presentation as part of the Blooming Basics. As Julie said, my name is Evie Torres. I work for the Linux Integration Center, which is a part of IBM Software Group. And if you need my contact information after the presentation, if you have a question, my email address is posted on the top of the first slide. So with that, let's get started with the agenda on slide number 3. This presentation covers a bit about what open source and open standards are, what Linux on System Z is, what the Linux distribution itself covers, some of the open source software that's available that's not just Linux itself. Then we'll take a look at some of the Linux distributions that are available for Linux on System Z, some of the integration between IBM middleware and the open source software. And lastly, we'll take a look at IBM's strategy and outlook when it comes to Linux, specifically for System Z. So what is really open source software? On slide number 4, you can see that the basic idea between open source software is that it's available as a free software. It's not necessarily owned by one company. So this allows programmers to be able to read, redistribute, and modify the source code, which is very different from proprietary software where the actual code itself is closed off. Having this type of environment really allows the software to evolve itself, and it actually is evolving at a faster speed than that of conventional software, for example, proprietary software. Just because you have more people involved, more people are looking at it, more people are actually giving feedback. And that's actually one of the main things with open source software, and that's the community around it. It's the community, like I said, that develops it, debugs it, and maintains it. So it's very good quality software. There's some misconceptions that because it's not owned by one company that there's no high performance of it or big quality, but there is. If you'd want to learn a little bit more about the open source initiative, you can visit the URL that's listed at the bottom of the page as well. Now, open source software is not something that's necessarily new. It's not something that started in the 90s or the 2000s. It's actually been around for a really long time, and that's what we see on slide number 5. Just that it wasn't called open source software. It was just software, and you didn't necessarily pay for it. You weren't necessarily concerned about who was making the changes or, you know, getting having the rights for it or selling licenses and things like that. So from the beginning, there was tons of information that was stored electronically, and even before then, it was stored on card decks. At conferences, few individuals would share this information within the tapes. You know, someone can take a look at it. They can make changes and exchange it back. Which is the foundation of open source software today, and that's, again, the community, where the community develops it, debugs it, and maintains it. So it's the same concept that has been around for a long time. It's not something new. If you want to take a look at some of the collections that are still available, you can go to the URL that's listed there. And some of the packages for operating systems on System Z that have been available, you know, since early in the days still continue to be available as open source software. On slide number 6, this is just an example of a couple of the open source software that's available for the mainframe that isn't necessarily just Linux. If you look at the center of the page, you see that this is I have listed references to open source software for ZOS and OS 390, ZOS Unix tools, supported tools for ZOS, OS 390, and ZOS Freeware. And there's many, many other, but this is just an example of how many tools are out there. So you're more than welcome to visit any of these links to get more information on what's available. The icons that you see located around the outer edges of the slide are probably it's probably open source software that are more popular. You'll probably be able to recognize many of these, for example, PHP, MySQL, Perl. These are all software that has been highly adopted. So now that we've known, now that you have an overview of what open source software is, the question really is, where does it really fall, how does it really fit into the open computing model? How does it really mix with open standards? And that's what we're talking about on slide number 7. The open computing model is actually made up of open standards, open source, open architecture, and community. And we continue to see that community really is kind of the foundation to all of this. Community is extremely important. With open standards, it allows us to share information among different technologies and really not have to worry about how they're communicating with each other. And this is by the use of published specifications or APIs. And even though we don't always think of what's the technology behind some of the tools that I use, open standards is there. You know, on a day-to-day basis, we might be using HTML, PDF. I mean, you downloaded this presentation as a PDF file, XML, the Internet Protocol, and we use these all the time. We just don't necessarily think, oh, you know, the technology behind it is open standards, but it really is important. And with open source, as we just talked about, with open source, we leverage that community development so that it accelerates the open standards adoption as well. And, you know, some examples like we just looked at, you have the Linux operating system is probably one of the most popular open source products out there. You have OpenOffice, Eclipse, Firefox. And then you also have open architecture. SOA would be an example of this, which allow us to have to continue innovating on top of common hardware specifications. On slide number 8, this is kind of a graph to show you that just because open source software has been highly adopted lately, more and more people are using it, it doesn't necessarily mean that every software that exists out there that's open source is mature or has been highly adopted by customers. Because it follows that community model, when an open source software comes out, the more that it's adopted by customers, the more feedback that the development individuals are going to get, and the more that product is going to mature on its own. So if we look at the right top quadrant, we'll see that some of the software that has been adopted by a lot of people, which, you know, in which sense make it very mature, are web browsers, databases, application servers, development tools such as Eclipse, the web servers such as Apache. I mean, these are all that are highly recognized among many individuals, and they're mature enough to where you can count on these technologies to run your critical businesses and run your critical applications without, you know, thinking twice about it. On the lower left-hand quadrant, we see some technologies that are emerging. So these are starting to get adopted by different individuals. So as they're starting to get more and more adopted, then they will slowly move over to the mature side. We see SOA, for example, grid and cloud, virtualization, systems management. And these are probably these technologies have actually come out a couple years back, so they're as of today, they're probably more in the middle of the quadrants as opposed to all the way in the far left, but this is just an example of, you know, showing that open source software starts at one point and, you know, with the more adoption that it gets, it will be mature. On slide number 9, we see an example of different accomplishments that IBM has around open standards. And if you paid attention to some of the links on the previous slide, you'll see that a lot of the links were IBM links. And that really isn't a surprise, as IBM is highly, highly committed to open standards. And it's not something that just happened, you know, when the hype of open standards and open source happened. IBM has been there since many, many, many years. If you look on the far left, you'll see that from the late 1990s, IBM was involved with Java, XML, with the foundation of Eclipse, with the foundation as well of UDDI. And I actually have team members in my team right now that were part of the UDDI group. So IBM really does get involved. If we look towards the middle, in 2004 and 2005, web services was a huge thing for IBM. And IBM, you know, was involved in many, many of the aspects of the creation of web services. In 2007, another example is SOA. And again, you know, IBM was there in many aspects of SOA. So with all of these, with all of this involvement that IBM has, it's also pledged hundreds of patents to the open source community. And not only has IBM been involved in the software side of things, but it's also been involved with the hardware, the services, and the architectural standards as well. And we're not doing this alone. We are collaborating with many, many organizations that are involved in the open standards as well. So now let's talk a little bit about what Linux is on System Z and what is it that makes Linux on System Z special. Slide number 11, if you're relatively new to Linux, this is just a brief overview of how it started and what it is. Linux began in the early 1990s and was developed by Linus Torvalds, and it's a free and open source Unix-like operating system. Again, like any other open source software, it was developed by a group of volunteer programmers, which would be the Linux community. These community members can pretty much live anywhere, be anywhere, and for the most part, they will work for large companies such as IBM. Now, what a lot of these companies do is they actually take the source code that has been developed by the community, and they will modify it a bit and make their own distribution of it. Two major examples for this would be Novell and Red Hat. They both have their own distributions of Linux, and both of them also offer a support subscription basis. So if you go to the Red Hat website, you can download a copy of their Red Hat Enterprise Linux version, and you can purchase a support license as well. So these are just different types that are available. And there's a lot more Linux distributions that are highlighted on this page, but it's just to name a few. On slide number 12, you might have heard different people calling Linux on System Z by different names, and you might hear some people say Linux on System Z, Linux for System Z, or Linux for S390. And the difference between the three is Linux on System Z refers to Linux on the mainframe in general. Linux for System Z refers to the 64-bit Linux distribution that exists on System Z. And Linux for S390 refers to the 31-bit distribution for Linux on Z. So some people are pretty good about distinguishing amongst the three. Others just use them interchangeably. But just know that there is a difference between the three different namings. Now, if you've used Linux on an x86 box, there really isn't much difference from using Linux on System Z. You've heard the term Linux is Linux. The only difference is Linux was ported to take advantage of the System Z architecture. So there's only a small percentage of the source code that was changed that differs from Linux on another platform to Linux on System Z. It's not that you're running an emulated version of Linux. You can run it natively on a System Z LPAR, or you could actually run it virtualized under ZVM. So the look and feel is all the same, as regardless of what platform it is that you're running Linux on. So there's, from the slides, you'll be able to gather that Linux on itself has some benefits and SystemZ itself has benefits as well. And when we put them together, that's when we get the synergies of Linux on SystemZ, which is what we see on slide number 13. Some of the benefits that Linux brings to the SystemZ side is the open standards and open source software, the community that is allowing of the rapid innovation of Linux, the large amounts of applications and tools that are available to run on Linux, and because Linux can run on many different architectures, you also get a great amount of individuals that have been already trained to play around with Linux, as well as new talent that's coming from the universities who are already focusing on Linux. So the pool of talent is pretty high. On the SystemZ side, what the value that it brings to Linux is, you know, reliable and secure hardware. You can have workload isolation, as well as have, you know, multiple diverse workloads on SystemZ. You can run hundreds of Linux servers on a single platform. And because of that, you also have this simplified systems management. So on slide number 14, it's what's actually unique to the combination of Linux on SystemZ. One of the things that's probably the most unique would be the virtualization of ZVM. And we'll look on the next slide for some further detail of ZVM. You also have hypersockets, which allows the data movement between LPARs and virtual servers. And all this would be at memory speed, which has a very low latency. You have your Crypto Express 2 features on SystemZ. And again, the management of the environment on SystemZ, allowing you to, you know, clone Linux guests in just a couple of minutes, have the same configuration. It really does allow you to test your solutions, to deploy your solutions a lot faster. On slide number 15, like I said, it's some of more of the benefits of running Linux on ZVM, where we have that virtualization. If we run Linux on a virtualized environment on ZVM, we have the capability to have a massive consolidation. So you can have 100 of your, you know, the smaller box servers, and you can consolidate them all onto one machine. So now not only are you saving floor space in the labs, are you saving energy, but you're also having the ability to manage them in a lot easier way because everything is on a single machine. When you have everything virtualized, you're sharing your CPU, your memory, and your I/O resources. And keep in mind that this virtualization that SystemZ has, it's not something that's added on. It's not a different tool. It's actually built into the hardware. So ZVM for SystemZ has actually been around way before VMware, for example. So when we hear all these other vendors talking about VMware, it really isn't any new technology. IBM has been doing it for many, many years and very successfully. So on slide number 16, I was just alluding to that it's not just the technological advantages that Linux on SystemZ has, but also advantages from a business perspective. I talked about consolidating many of those servers into a single machine. By doing so, you can have environmental and consolidation savings. So in turn, you are reducing your total cost of ownership by consolidating your solutions onto a SystemZ. You'll have, again, you know, you'll have less storage, less servers that are needed, less software licenses, and less server management support. And, you know, like I've been saying, you'll also have the reliability and the security of having a SystemZ box with you. And the speed to market is very important because you're able to create all of these, either create or clone all of these Linux images within just a couple of minutes. You're able to test your solutions. You're able to make any upgrades or any changes that you need to in a very rapid speed, which allows you to be on top of the market. If you needed to deploy your solutions to the smaller servers, it would take you a lot longer to do. So that's a big, that's a great advantage to having Linux on System Z. So now let's look at what's actually inside of the Linux distribution. And that's on slide number 18. You may have or may not have already played around with different Linux distributions. The main Linux itself will cover what we'll be talking about right now in the next couple of slides. Now, each different distribution on its own may have different variants or, you know, maybe different GUI applications or any add-ons that the distributor will add. But the foundation is what we're looking at on slide number 18. So a way to look at it is think of the Linux distribution as an apple. At the core of the apple is the Linux kernel. And if you cut the apple, let's say we cut it into four major slices, you have your users, your system administrators, webmasters, and programmers. And within each of these slices, you have different different packages that make up that are necessary for these programmers, users, or webmasters, etc. So the first one we'll look at is the system administrator slice on slide number 19. So the packages that are included in this slice of the apple, if we continue on with the analogy, are packages that are needed for network services for the most part. So you'll have your packages for DHCP, LDAP, SAMBA, FTP, packages needed to do remote login, VPN, your HTTP servers, and many, many other. On slide number 20, we have the packages that a programmer would need. So most of these packages are the development packages. We have examples of them are the GNU CNC++ compiler. We'll have the Java SDKs and JREs, PHP, Perl, Python, Ruby, Eclipse, and many other tools that are available. Slide number 21 is an example of the packages that a webmaster would need. So most of these packages are around information management and databases. So we have the Apache Derby or the IBM Cloud Space are included in a Linux distribution. MySQL is another example. And there's even some for the open source business intelligent packages that are in there as well. And lastly, on slide number 22, are some of the packages that are used more from an end-user perspective. So these are more browser-based. So we'll have, you know, the Linux distribution comes with the Mozilla Firefox, either SeaMonkey or Conqueror. They're just different variants that will come in each of the Linux distributions. And with each of the Linux distributions, you can install or pretty much uninstall what's needed or what's not needed just because you have more control of your operating system. So now let's take a look at some of the open source software that's available for Linux on System Z, going on to slide number 24. So I'm not going to go through all of these, but just wanted to highlight, you know, what some of them are and what they're used for. Now, some of the popular ones would be the Apache Derby, and that's the pure Java relational database, also known as the IBM CloudScape. We have the Globus Toolkit, which is the platform for grid computing. Available is also JBoss, which is the open source application server from Red Hat. And lastly, on the bottom is the WebSphere or the WAS Community Edition. And that's IBM's application server that's based on open source. Slide number 25 has just some additional ones just to keep on highlighting what's available out there, some of the, you know, the popular tools that are used. You have OpenRegs for Linux. You have text editors, and you have the open service-oriented architecture and many other ones. You can probably just, you know, do a quick search on Google open source software, and you'll get the page where you'll see tons and tons of listings of them. So now let's look at What are the actual Linux distributions that are available on Linux on System Z? On slide number 27, we see a quick history of where Linux, you know, how when it started and where it is now for Linux on the mainframe. So we see that Linux on the mainframe became available in the 2000s, and the first one, or one of the first ones, was a distribution from Novell, which is the SUSE Linux Enterprise Server. And through the time, other distributors started making their own versions available on System Z. So as we look at the 2001s to the 2003s, we'll see that Red Hat started creating their own distribution for Linux on the mainframe, and continued evolving it as well. As we go on to the 2004s, towards the 2007s, we'll see that SUSE kept on evolving their versions as well as Red Hat. And if we look all the way on the bottom right of the chart, you'll see that there's other ones as well that aren't really highlighted on this chart, but are available if you did want to use them. And that's there's Debian versions that are supported on the mainframe. CentOS, Gentoo, and Slackware are also available. Within IBM, though, and this is important to note, within IBM, the two supported distributions on the mainframe are the SUSE Linux Enterprise Server by Novell and the Red Hat Linux Enterprise Server by the Red Hat Company. Those are the two where IBM will focus on and where our solutions will be running on. Slide number 28 just has a different way of looking at the different Linux distributions that are available on the mainframe. And you can just kind of categorize them by the different generations that have been throughout the years. So starting back from 2000, in the early years, you can consider that, you know, Generation Zero, and going on to where we are today with the SUSE Linux Enterprise Server 11 and the Red Hat Enterprise Linux version 6, where we're at Generation 5. So it's just a bit different way of looking at it. On slide number 25, on slide number 29, is an example of how the Linux distributions are tested and supported within IBM. So this chart is actually a look at the 64-bit Linux distributions. And if you look at the graph, you'll see some check marks and X's and asterisks as to which distribution is supported on which specific System Z hardware. So anywhere that you see the X on this diagram, it's a Linux distribution that has been tested and is fully supported by IBM on that specific platform. So, for example, on the second row, if we look at SLES 10, we'll see that SLES 10 has been tested and is supported on Z series, the System Z9, and the System Z10. When we look at SLES 11, which is on the third row, you can see that there's a red X, and that means that SLES 11 is not supported by IBM on the Z series. When we look at REL 3 right under that, we'll see that for the Z9, there's an asterisk, and that means that the support of REL 3 on that particular hardware really does depend on the customer support. So if we did have a customer that, you know, where it was critical for them to be supporting that platform, then IBM will look into that. For the Z10, the line across the column basically just means that it has not been tested on that platform. So for slide number 30 is just a very similar table to what we just saw on the previous slide, just that this concentrates on the 31-bit Linux distributions that are available. You will notice a difference in the amount of check marks that there is on this slide as the previous slide. And this is for SLES 10 and for SLES 11, for example. the Linux distributor is no longer making them available for Linux on the mainframe. So they're focusing more on the 64-bit as opposed to the 31-bit. And you'll see that as well with the Red Hat versions. So these two tables are just very good reference points if you ever wanted to see, you know, where IBM stands in terms of the Linux distributions, what IBM supports or what it doesn't, or what may be considered. These two slides would just be of good reference to have in the future. So now going on to talk about the integration of the open source software that exists and the IBM middleware. On slide number 32, we see an overview of the integration between the IBM middleware and the open source software. IBM has actually been using Linux as a blueprint for this, and it is now extending the activity that IBM has dedicated to Linux, but it's now extending it to many other areas in open source, and it's extending it across not only software, but hardware and services as well. On the outer part of this circle, in the kind of the square teal boxes on the outside in the white space, we see some of the eight main areas of open source software. These would be software development, web application servers, information management, open source services, cloud offerings, hardware platforms, systems management, and client collaboration. If you look at the center of this diagram, you'll see that these are the key areas where IBM is participating in. And these would be Linux, Eclipse, Apache, Mozilla, and open source. Note that it is not an exhaustive list of where IBM participates in, but these are definitely some of the key areas where IBM is paying attention to in the open source space. Right on the outside, on the yellow ring, are other open source projects that IBM contributes to. And these would be, examples are Eclipse, Dojo, Geronimo, Derby, Power.org, Zen, I don't know if I mentioned OpenOffice. And again, this is not an exhaustive list, but just an example of it. And as you look towards now the teal area or the outer ring, you'll see where the integration with the IBM middleware and the open source software really does happen. You'll see many of our IBM brands highlighted. So you have Tivoli, Lotus, Rational, Webster, Information Management, and you'll notice that each of these brands do have an overlap with open source software. Some of our brands or some of our products will either directly include the open source software in them, or they will take that technology and build upon it. But this really does highlight how important open source software is to IBM and to the technology that IBM is creating. On slide number 33 and 34, these are some examples of some of the IBM offerings that we have. Some of these were highlighted in the previous slide. But one example, and I'll just touch on a few. One example is DB2 for LUW, or DB2 for Linux, Unix, and Windows. This version of the DB2 offering, with it you can program with various different open source programming languages such as PHP, Perl, Python, Ruby. So it's not that DB2 is a closed off product and can only talk to, you know, DB2 languages and DB2 protocols. It's because it's based on open source, you can integrate it with many other projects that you may have. Lotus Domino is another example. Lotus Domino is our email server product. And you can exchange data, again, with PHP, XML. It supports Dojo for Ajax and Web 2.0. So, again, you can definitely have Lotus Domino in your environment, and you can integrate it with other technology that's out there that's based on open source. And all the way on the bottom, we have WebSphere Mesh. And here we just have the delivery of, of Web 2.0 applications for SOA, which uses REST or integrates with REST and PHP again, Dojo, Java. So you really do get a sense of how, you know, and I'm going to keep on saying it, how important open source software really is. Slide number 34, these are just additional examples. So the WebSphere application server that IBM has actually includes the HTTP server, which is powered by Apache. So these are some things that, you know, people may not notice right off of the bat, you know, out of the box when they install it, but that open source technology that's been developed by that community is included. And the last one I'll touch on is all the way at the bottom, the Tivoli Directory Integrator. And if you have TDI, you're able to connect to OpenLDAP and pretty much any other directory server that's compliant with the LDAP version 3 standards. So that, you know, when you run the IBM products, you're not just limited to creating a solution that just has IBM technology. And in most cases, customers will have a diverse set of technology in their environments. So you would want to have a product that can talk to all these diverse products and offerings. So going on to slide number 35, we can see from the previous charts that IBM is really committed to Linux. It saw the potential for Linux many, many years ago, and it made major commitments to Linux. And part of that commitment is providing all of IBM's key software products to run on Linux. So in this chart, we see the five major, and I guess you can consider them the five major software brands within IBM. And all of these brands have products that run on Linux. So for Rational, we have our development tools that run on Linux. On WebSphere, you have your business flexibility and integration products that run on Linux. For information management, you have, you know, your databases and your content management and business intelligent products running on Linux. For Lotus, our collaboration suite that we have runs on Linux. For Tivoli, there's many, many products, as an example, service management products that run on Linux. So I can probably take, you know, 2 hours going over all of the products that IBM has, but instead, you can just visit some of the links that are listed below. Wouldn't want to bore you with listing over 500 IBM products that we have that run on Linux, but if you are curious and want to take a look, you can definitely go to one of those URLs. On slide number 36, this is just a quick view of how IBM right now is paying attention to the support of these products for Linux on System Z. It is not a complete list. This is probably the top 80 products where IBM every quarter will make sure that the support is meeting up to the latest releases of Linux for System Z, or the ones that maybe don't have that support, but we're getting customer demand for it. We make sure that these IBM products are actually putting emphasis and, you know, try to get it on the roadmap to where we will be delivering what our customers are wanting. And slide number 37, and I think this was the link that was two slides back, but this is what it would look like, is our software matrix for Linux middleware. This is actually a matrix that's developed by my team, the Linux Integration Center. So you can go to there, and you'll get pretty much a PDF file where you can sort by product, by brand, if you're looking just for System Z, you can sort it by System Z, and you'll get the products that are supported on that particular platform. But it's a very good starting point if you're thinking of a solution and want to make sure that it runs on Linux or that it runs on Linux on System Z. So now, lastly, let's look at where IBM's strategy stands in terms of Linux and Linux on System Z on slide number 39. We've touched on this already throughout the presentation, but IBM's commitment is for Linux, for IBM's commitment to Linux is not only to have our major software products running on Linux, but also running on our various different platforms. So we have Linux that runs on Linux on Z. We have Linux that runs on System X. We have Linux that runs on Power. We even have Linux that runs on different game consoles. And the ability to have Linux running across multiple platforms and across multiple brands really gives IBM an advantage in that customers have a choice. It's, you can now be running your solution where it's most fit to your environment. So it's not that we only give our customers one option of run Linux on System Z. It's what really, you know, is the need for the business, and we have a solution for you. On slide number 40, I'm continuing on with some of the Linux on System Z strategy. It's very important to note that IBM's commitment to ZOS and VSE is not affected by the Linux strategy. IBM having support for Linux on System Z is not and will not replace any of the different System Z operating systems that exist right now. The strategy is more focusing on having that tight integration of solutions that are running on ZOS. For example, many customers have DB2 running on ZOS and some of the web server applications running on Linux on System Z. So it creates a diverse environment, and the strategy is more focusing on that integration between the two as opposed to eliminating one versus the other. So this is just opening up new doors to Linux-centric workloads to the System Z platform. So we can just build upon it as opposed to taking away what customers already have on System Z. We will continue to expand our leadership in virtualization. The IBM System Z strategy will continue to be a strategic platform for server consolidation and IT simplification. And we always are continuing to expand the Linux ecosystem. So working with business partner, working with developers, having initiatives of porting applications that aren't already supported on it. On slide number 41, this is just a quick view of IBM's 64-bit Linux strategy. And you kind of saw this in a couple of slides back when I showed a table of what was supported on 31-bit and 64-bit. And we did see that the Linux distributions for 64-bit had a lot more green check marks than 31-bit did. And this is really where IBM's strategy is. Since the release of Red Hat 4 and SLES 9, the 64-bit Linux distributions became strategic. And this is mostly on the server platforms. We don't see this as much on the desktop side, but it definitely is on the server platforms. And there is no requirement for middleware to be supported for 64-bit. We can always have the 31-bit middleware running in a 64-bit environment. And along with the commitment that IBM has, IBM has also invested a lot of money into organizations that are solely focused just on Linux. And that's what we see on slide 42. The team within IBM that actually contributes to the development of Linux is the Linux Technology Center. We have over 600 developers around the world that are making sure that Linux is better, making sure that our IBM products run on Linux, and are helping expand the Linux reach in our different environments. And the LTC, they would definitely be considered the technical liaison between the IBM customers and the direct Linux distribution partners. The second group would be the Linux Integration Center, which is the team I work for on slide number 43. And our team focuses, we're considered a pre-sales team where we focus on delivering the IBM middleware solutions on Linux. So a bit different than the LTC, but we do focus on increasing that footprint of IBM middleware that does run on Linux, and we do this by working closely with either our business partners or our sales teams. And if you're interested in getting more information about our team, the URLs are listed towards the bottom of the slide. Some other teams are listed on slide number 44, and these are different programs that IBM has. Some programs focus solely on business partners. We have thousands of business partners with IBM. Some of the programs are like Partner World, for example, where business partners can sign up and they have access to some of our software, some of our training material, et cetera. We have a Chip Hopper program, which allows ISV applications to be ported to specific platforms. So this one is really useful when a customer is considering consolidating a solution from x86, for example, over to Linux on System Z. We also have IBM developer programs. One of them would be the DeveloperWorks Linux Zone. This is I think I have the URL listed on the back of the slides, but it's an external page that's available. You don't necessarily have to be an IBM business partner to access it, but if you do go to the DeveloperWorks Linux Zone, you'll have access to different red books, best practices, papers, tutorials, and many, many other information to get you up to speed or get you the information that you need. And now just lastly, I'm closing up on slide 45. Throughout the presentation, you know, we saw how IBM really is investing in Linux all around the world. So it's not that, you know, we only focus on one team. We have support teams within IBM that focus on Linux. We have porting centers available to help customers and business partners. We have competency centers, one of which is the Linux Innovation Center. Most of our software products run on Linux and run on Linux on the different IBM hardware that's out there. We have Linux services and web pages or, you know, sectors of IBM that are solely dedicated to Linux. And not just to Linux itself as open source software, but like we saw in some of the earlier slides, all of the different open source software where IBM is contributing to and where IBM has a key focus, because that technology is in our products, and that's what makes our products successful. And with that, the last couple of pages that I want to highlight start in slide 47 to slide number 49, and those would just be additional resources for you to get information. This presentation gave you an overview of what open source software is, what open standards, and where IBM stands. But if you now want to take a deeper dive for maybe a particular product, a particular solution, or a particular area of where IBM is focusing on, you can definitely check out any of these links that are posted in the back. There's some for just general Linux information, as well as some of our business partner links that we work with for Linux on System Z. And on slide number 49, definitely some links to more detailed red books that have been created by subject matter experts within IBM. So those are definitely worthwhile to check them out. And with that, I'd like to open it up for questions.
Thank you. And once again, that is star one if you would like to ask a question today. And once again, as a reminder, that is star one to ask a question. And there appears to be no questions at this time. I will turn the call over to Ms. Leisenfeld.
Thank you, Tamika. Evie, thank you so much for taking us through the value of open source. And why don't we go ahead and we'll take a six-minute break, and we'll start up again at the top of the hour. So, Tamika, I'll turn it back to you.
Great, wonderful. And everyone will be placed on hold with music at this time.